Today we are on the third part of Seven Deadly Sins, and we come to the topic of anger. Anger. It's probably the most damaging sin of all. And in the Bible and elsewhere, anger is often associated with fire. Anger burns. His burning anger was within him, for example, a passage of the Bible says. And like fire, if you're not careful, it can burn everything in the path of the people that we love, and in the end, also ourselves. Think of all the severed relationships, perhaps in your life or around you, because of anger. Whether it is a divorce, a lost friendship, or estranged family, so many have been broken because of the sin of anger. Now, anger not only breaks up families and friends, but it also causes many wars and many loss of lives. You know, heads of states are really no different than you and me. All it takes is one leader of a country having a fit with another leader of the country and them becoming angry at one another, and before you know it, tens of thousands of young men and women are dead. All because of the sin of anger. So today, we'll deal with the sin of anger, and my outline goes like this. Number one, why do we get angry? And number two, what makes it sinful? And number three, how do we deal with it? Okay. So first of all, why do we get angry? We get angry when there is a gap between what we think should be versus what is in the things that we love. When there's a gap between, in our minds, what we think should be and what is in the things that we love. For example, why do we get angry with somebody when somebody cuts us off in traffic? Have you ever gotten, you're going home and you're stuck in traffic and then there's this tiny little gap and then this guy, young guy, just budges in and cuts you off and then comes in front of you and you're furious, you're honking your horn, and you want to get ahead and cut him off, right, when you finally exit out of there? Well, why do we get so angry? I mean, have you ever thought about the illogical state of that? How many seconds have you lost? None. Maybe 0.2 seconds. Not even a second that you have lost, but we are furious and we are ready to cut that person's head off. Why is that? It's because what we think should have happened is that that person should have waited in traffic just like you have for what seemed like hours, but really few minutes. But that person didn't wait. He went all the way to the front of the line and he cut you off and he should not have done that. And so there's a dichotomy, difference between what should be and what is. But really, it has to do with your passion. We'll see later on. And it's because of your own sense of right and wrong. That you want your rights, and you feel like your right has been violated. Your right to occupy that space has been violated, and you love your space. So we'll see more of that later on. But James 4:1-4 says this, what causes quarrels and what causes fights among you? Is it not this, that your passions are at war within you? You desire and you do not have, so you murder. You covet and cannot obtain, so you fight and quarrel. So what causes anger in us? It's our passions. It's our desire. In one word, it's what we love. It's what we love that causes anger that is in us. It's in the process of wanting to protect what we love. It's trying to defend what we love that is called anger. Let me give you an illustration. Last week, my daughter, my first one, started coughing almost uncontrollably. She was diagnosed with sinus infection, and so it was getting to the back of her throat, and that's what was making her cough. And she was doing all day. And one day, in the middle of the evening, and she was next to me, and we were trying to watch something, and she was coughing, and I found these words coming out of my mouth. And those words were, Senna, can't you do something about your cough? It's so annoying. And my wife was listening to this, and she said, honey, that was so mean. She can't help it. She's sick. And I thought about that, and I was stunned, actually, to have those words come out of my mouth, because I'm never like that. I'm not like that to you. I'm not like that to my, especially my loved ones in my family. And I thought about why those words came out. It wasn't because I didn't like my daughter. No, I love my daughter, but it's really because I love my daughter. I hated the coughing. I hated the virus. I hated the sickness in her, because every time she coughed, I couldn't feel it in my lung. As parents, you understand this. Most of you are parents, right? When your child is sick, you rather be sick. I'd rather be coughing than her. I would rather feel it in my bones than have her cough. And so that was not sitting well with me, and so I just did not know what I was doing, and it just blurted out. And I realized, oh, that could not have gone in, that could not have been taken in the right way, in any way. But you see, it's what we love. What we love makes us angry. In trying to protect it or defend it, the emotions that arise because we love it so much and we are trying to defend it, that's what we call anger. So anger is caused when there is a gap between what we think should be and what is, and we're trying to shorten or narrow the gap because we love that thing. So let me give you some more characteristics of anger. Three of them. First of all, it is rarely about what's on the surface. Anger is rarely about what's on the surface. There's something deeper that really matters to us. When the checkout lady is taking her sweet old time, right, and you got only 15 minutes left on your lunch time, and you are getting agitated, right? Inside, why don't you hurry up? Why are you talking with that customer? Do your job, woman, right? Just get through the line and get to me so I can have my lunch and get back to my work. I got 15 minutes, and you're angry, you're agitated. But let me ask you, is it really because of that checkout lady that you're angry? That she spent maybe 2 extra minutes in you getting your lunch? It's really not about that. If you think really about it, it's more, you know, your boss is on your case. He's on your case saying that, you know what, if you want a promotion, then you need to show up on time, then you need to do harder work, and you just say after. And all of that is in your head, and that's why you need to get back to your work as soon as you can. And then maybe it's your coworkers that are pressuring you. They're calling your slack off, and you don't really like that because that's gonna show the negative side. And so it's this pressure. It's really, really what you love is your reputation. You love your reputation, and your reputation is about to be ruined because of this lady who's taking her sweet old time. But it's really not her. It's really you, isn't it? You're the one who decided to take 45 minutes getting there, but you're blaming it on somebody else, and you're getting angry at somebody else. So when we get angry, it's really never about that particular thing that we are angry about. There's something usually lying underneath it that is deeper. That is a very good hint, by the way, if you have a fight with your spouse, right? Why did you squeeze that toothpaste from the middle? Right? That's so annoying. Who does that? It's not about that, really. It's about something else that's deeper. It might have to do with your in-laws. It might have to do with the fact that you wouldn't change the floors or get a new, you know, island. Or it might be about that. It's never about that little thing. So that's a characteristic of anger. Number two, the more we express anger, the more angry we get. That's another characteristic. You know, there is a popular belief that in order for us to deal with anger management, we have to bottle it up, or we can't bottle it up. We have to express it, because if we don't express it, then it will get bottled up, and one day it will just blow up and we'll kill somebody. So express your anger in a healthy way. That's what they say. But it never works, because the Bible says our anger is like fire. It burns. In order to contain a huge forest fire, imagine, you're just going to start a small fire. Right? You don't want a big fire, so you're going to just start a small fire. Does that make sense to you? No, you don't start any fire at all, because if you start a small fire, soon what will happen? It's going to burn everything else up, and it's going to become a big fire. You can't contain it. And so it doesn't work for us to express it, because anger is addictive. The more anger you express, more anger there will be for you to burn. It's like fuel. And then you can't just suppress it either, because they are right. It will get bottled up, and one day it will explode. You have to replace it with something better. And we'll talk more about that later on. Third characteristic is that not all anger is sinful. Since it is one of the 7 deadly sins, we think, well, anger obviously is sinful because it does so much damage, but it's not always sinful. Ephesians 4:26, Joanna actually, right before she read it, came up to me and said, is this right? It says, be angry. Bible says to be angry. Does that make sense? Yeah, that's exactly what it says. Be angry and do not sin. Ephesians 4:26, do not let the sun go down on your anger. So it doesn't say do not sin by getting angry. It doesn't say that, but rather in your anger, NIV would say, in your anger, do not sin. What it's really saying is that there is such thing as righteous anger. There are cases where we should be angry. And God is an angry God. Right? God gets angry. When Nehemiah in the Old Testament, and this is an example of a righteous anger, Nehemiah in the Old Testament saw the nobles, these people higher up in position, were treating these poor people and were taking advantage of them, he was angry and he wanted to do something about that. It was anger at injustice that he was seeing. That's the righteous kind of anger. When you and I see people that are being slighted, there are these people that are higher up that are embezzling money off of the poor people, we get angry and that makes us take action, well, that's good. That's righteous anger. Martin Luther King Jr., why did he lead that civil rights movement? What caused it? Anger. Whites only, right? Coloreds only. That shouldn't be. That is not right. I need to narrow the gap because I love these people that bear God's image. And so we're going to do something about that. That was righteous anger that led to a great thing that you and I enjoy today. So those are some of the characteristics of anger. Now, let's move on to number two. When does it become sin then? It's not always sin to be angry, but obviously it can be sinful. When does it become sin? You see, anger comes from our love, what we love. We said that. Sin is disordered love. Sin is when we love something more than we should. As a matter of fact, we are created to love God more than anything else. And disorder love, if we put anything in front of God, then that becomes disorder. It's not orderly, and that becomes what's called sin. And St. Augustine is the one who said that. The sin is disordered love. So let me take an example. For example, it is good to want a good reputation. You want people to think well of you. Well, that's a good thing that you desire. However, if that becomes the ultimate thing, that becomes what you live for, then it becomes your idol, it becomes your God, and it becomes disordered love, and that becomes sin. And for that, you would do, why do you think people would murder? Why do you think people hire hitmen to the politicians, for example? Because their reputation has become the ultimate. They cannot afford to lose their good reputation. And so if they need to murder, if they need to kill, if they need to do under the table type of dealings, then they will do it. Why? Because their reputation has become their God. And that becomes sinful. And ultimately, it burns the person who is committing it. So anger becomes sinful in three ways. Let me give you three things. Number one, when is it excessive? When it's larger than it should. Number two, when it's protracted. When it lasts longer than it should. And then thirdly, when it's destructive rather than constructive. So when it's excessive, when anger is excessive, it is sin. We get more angry than we should. That is sin. Verse 26, be angry and do not sin. It's okay for us to be angry. Yes, we should get angry at certain things, but do not sin in it. That's what it's saying. So when our anger is disproportional, when it's not proportional to the offense that was committed, that becomes sin. For example, we get more angry that we got passed over for a promotion than when we hear about lives being lost at the hands of terrorists in the Middle East. It's no big deal when people, even children, are killed by the extremists, as we read about maybe several weeks ago in the Middle East. But we lose our heads when the phone company charges us $5 more than they should have. We're chewing them out. And then we read that article on the New York Times about all these children being murdered just because they're Christians, we go, and we move on. Disproportionate anger, that is sinful. Travel the world, go to Thailand, and see how much injustice there is in the world. See and weep. We become a lot less angry about supposed injustices that we experience in the U.S. By the way, this teaches us that we should get angry at certain things, like we said, because there is such thing as righteous anger. If you don't get angry at all, you can't remember the last time that you were angry. It's probably not because you're a saint. It's not because you're so tight with God. It's probably because you don't care. Right? Indifference. Indifference is worse than hatred. You see, when you get angry at somebody, when you're fighting, at least you care enough to fight. But when you are lethargic and when you don't say anything at all and you just don't care, when you're indifferent, that's worse than hate. You just don't care. You don't care if that person's alive or not. You don't even want to give that person the dignity of being hated. That person doesn't exist. Right? That's the worst thing we can do to another person. And so if we don't ever get angry and we've gotten to that point, then there's something wrong. We should get angry about certain things. God gets angry. Why would God get angry? Actually, the Bible describes over and over that God is full of anger. His fury will be poured out upon us. His wrath will be poured out upon us. And we look at that and we go, oh, that just doesn't sound right. You know, we're thinking about Zeus throwing the thunderbolts everywhere and killing and killjoy. And no, you know why he gets angry? God gets angry because he loves us that much. He loves us that much so that when we are doing things, when we are engaged in things that are killing us, that are harming us, that are taking our joys away, God goes, I don't like that. I want to get rid of that. The same way that I get angry when my daughter was coughing. I wasn't angry at her. I was mad at the sinus infection. I was mad at the disease, the virus, and I want to remove it. And that's why God is full of anger, because he's full of love. If you never get angry, it's probably because you have no love. Right? It will make us angry. It should, certain things, make us angry. So, however, how do we know it became excessive, too much, when we hate the person rather than the sin in the person? That's too much. You've gone overboard. You want to get rid of the person, not the problem. You don't ever want to restore that person back. You just don't want to see that person at all. Then we know that our anger has gone too much. It's excessive. Number two, when it becomes sinful is also when it's protracted. It lasts longer than it should. And the Bible says, guess how long it should last, our anger? 12 hours. 15 hours at most. Because verse 26, second part of it says, do not let the sun go down on your anger. Right? And don't be saying to me, well, you know, if we lived in Alaska and it's summertime, it never goes down. So it's okay. No, here, okay? Especially in the wintertime, I mean, it goes down at 4 o'clock. So if you get mad at somebody at 2 o'clock, guess what? How many hours you got? 2 hours to get rid of that anger that is in you. Right? It becomes sinful when it becomes resentment and when it becomes a grudge. Right? And there is a reason why we hold on to the grudge and resentment. Because there is this twisted pleasure in it. Right? We like to think of that offense that was done to us some time ago, and we play it in our heads over and over and over. And while we are doing that, we are plotting revenge. We're thinking about what we would like to happen to that person who offended us. How that person is going to drop out of the hole, or how that person is going to be exposed, or how that person is going to get the wrath from God in a certain way, and all of that. And we're plotting in our heads, and we would never carry it out, of course, most of us anyway. But we take this twisted pleasure in doing that. That's protracted anger. We're playing it in our heads over and over and over, and we're thinking about what we would like to see happen to that person to be punished for the pain that that person has inflicted to us. That is sinful, right? That's lacking forgiveness. We need to release. We need to let go. We need to forgive, in other words, because protracted anger is sinful. It is addictive because physiologically, when we get angry, there is that adrenaline that comes out of our body that is secreted, and it gives us that sense of pleasure. And that's why sometimes people get into this shouting match on purpose. These people that always fight, a couple, they can't wait until the spouse comes home so that they can get their anger out, that they can release it. And there is pleasure associated with that. But again, that's a wrong kind of pleasure. That's a wrong kind of fire that will kill everything in the path. Thirdly, it is wrong when it's destructive. Anger is sinful when the goal of it is not to destroy sin, but to destroy the sinner. Verse 27, give no opportunity to the devil with your anger. Give him opportunity for what?
For him to destroy us because Satan is a murderer and destroyer.
Think of how many people have felt their lives were worthless and thus ended up either dying emotionally or in cases physically. Think of these words. You're nothing. You're worthless. You're stupid. You will amount to nothing. Ever heard those words or uttered those words? Expressions of anger destroy so many boys and girls that could not spread their wings and did something great for the Lord because of those angry words. They destroy. And that is certainly sinful. Let me suggest to you how to control anger when we are at the moment. One thing. When you're angry at somebody, especially a loved one, ask yourself this question. Right in the middle of the argument, next time, think of this question. Are you trying to win the argument, or are you trying to win the person? Are you trying to win the argument, or are you trying to win the person? You know, most of the time you try to win the argument. When you win the argument, you lose a person. You know that, right? But when you are thinking, you know what? This argument is not about me winning the argument. This argument is not saying my reasoning is better than her reasoning. But really, this is for the family. This is for her. When you think that way, sometimes you will lose the argument. But you will win the person. Which is better? You winning the argument saying that, I have a better logic than you. I'm better than you. Wife, husband, whom you married, by the way. Right? You're the idiot who married her. Right? Or, you know what, you're right. I see that. Yeah, maybe I was wrong. Almost immediately when you do that, anger dissipates. The other person responds with, yeah, well, maybe this is wrong too. You know, how I'm doing is wrong too. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's my fault. Okay, you know, let's make up and, you know, everything is, okay, usually it doesn't work like that, but it has a potential of working like that. Right? Let me back down. Are you trying to win the argument? And you know, this also is true when you're witnessing to somebody and you know, we're having a heated argument with an atheist. You can never win the person by winning the argument. I've never read of somebody who said, after a long protracted argument, an atheist saying, wow, I see that your reasoning is right. I believe God is real. Let me believe in him. Never. No. The more we argue, the higher the wall that they put up. But when we say, you know what, I love you, and I don't understand the question, or I haven't even thought about it, but I know we can find the answer. But I want you to consider this. And then that person backs down. And a lot of times we end up winning the person because of that. So constructive arguments Proverbs 15:1, a soft answer turns away anger, but a harsh word stirs up anger. How true is that? Lastly, number three, how do we deal with this anger? We've already been talking about it, but let me give a couple more suggestions. Psalm 4:4 says almost exactly the same thing, verbatim, as Ephesians 4. Be angry and do not sin. And then it says, ponder in your own hearts, on your beds, and be silent. Offer right sacrifices and put your trust in the Lord. So the first thing we do when we are angry is to zoom out and see it in context. When you're angry, when the arguments heat up, zoom out of it and try to see that moment in context. You see, anger makes us myopic. Okay? Anger makes us nearsighted. Anger makes us focus on that one little issue that you happen to be arguing about, and you forget the entire world because of what you're focused on. It short-circuits us, and it gives us a wrong perspective on things. And you know, it could be winning an argument against your spouse over who forgot to pick up the kid from the nursery. It could be over that, but could you zoom out of that heated argument and ask yourself, you know, what am I so mad about? Right? What happens if I lose this argument? What happens if I win this argument? What is so important to me that I'm trying to defend? What is it that I love that I feel like was violated that I'm trying to defend? Is it my reputation? Or is it my integrity that is at stake here? Or is it my words? What am I trying to defend? Zoom out. See it in context. What is it that you're trying to defend? What is it that you're trying to win with that argument, with your supposed loved one? It says, ponder in your hearts, on your beds, and be silent. Ponder what? Right? Ponder what it is that is making you mad and why you're so upset, why you're so invested in it, why it matters so much to you. Is it proportional to the wrong that was done? Is it really that big a deal? Right? What is the best reaction to this so that I don't destroy the person, but I constructively build this relationship even out of this? So zoom out and see it in context. Number two, consider how God dealt with our anger against him. You see, ultimately, anger rises from our disordered love. We love something other than God too much, and when it is threatened, we feel angry. And if we are honest with ourselves, often it is with God that we are angry. Ever thought about that? We wouldn't like to think like that, but really, it is God. A lot of times we find at fault for what's wrong in this world, and especially what's wrong in my life, because we know that God is sovereign. He can control all things, and we have prayed for it, and it didn't happen the way we prayed for it. So whose fault is it? A lot of times we'll blame somebody else because we know not to blame God. Oh, you don't do that. But really, we're mad at God. We're angry at God for not making that prayer happen, or not healing that person, or losing that loved one. But we don't dare say it. But really, in our hearts, we believe God is at fault. You know, and that comes out in various ways. Sometimes we'll start skipping services because we are mad at God. And you ask them, we haven't seen you in a while, and that person will give you all kinds of reasons, but really that person doesn't want to come because he doesn't want to be in the presence of God. He's angry at God. And sometimes that hurts me and Pastor LD, and they start avoiding us because we are supposed to be representatives of God, and so anything that reminds of me, God, I don't want it. And I understand that as a pastor, right? That happens because we are angry at God. We're angry at anything that represents God, whether it's church, pastor, or even you guys, church members. Well, how would God react to us when we are angry at him? Would he get back to us in anger as we would? Let me answer that this way. My second child was pretty sick this week. Second child, so both of them were sick this week. She was diagnosed with a severe case of pneumonia on Wednesday, and the PA told us that by the next day, if she doesn't improve, then we need to admit her to the Children's Hospital in Tacoma. At 4 o'clock in the morning that night, something startled me, and I woke up, and I just had this urgency to go to see my daughter who was sleeping in another room. And when I got there, my wife was already up checking up her temperature. I don't know why she was at 4 o'clock. You know, maybe, I don't know. 104 temperature. Not good. Severe pneumonia. So conflict in my head. Do I take her to the emergency room right now or do I wait a couple more hours? Well, I decided that we're just going to pray at this point. Maybe I will take her in the morning, but at this point, we'll pray. I put my hand on her forehead and I started praying for her, Jenna and I both. And you know, as I was praying, what I was really wishing? That her sickness, her pneumonia would transfer over to me, that I would get it, and my health will transfer over to her so that she would get better. If I could have done that, that was my choice, I would have done it in a flash. And if you're a parent, you know exactly what I'm talking about, because you all thought that when your child was sick. If you're a single person, you have never thought that about anybody. I didn't when I was single. But now that I'm a parent, so, you know, some of you who are youth my members, you know, I love you guys, but I never loved you enough for me to say when you were sick, like, let that person's sickness be in me and my health be in you. No, like, deal with it on your own, okay? I'll pray for you, but that's about it. But when it's your child, I don't care. I want it to be me. I want to be sick instead of her. There was a person who had that power to do that and who did that. You realize that, don't you? That's exactly what God did on the cross. And who did he do it for? He wasn't doing it for a cute little 60-year-old like my Sari. He was doing it for monsters, sinners, haters of God like you and me. When venom was coming out of us, really. Whenever we didn't get what we wanted, we were blaming God. While we were doing that, God decided, you know what, I'm going to lay my hand on you and your sickness, your poison in your body will come and flow through me, and my pure blood will transfer over and flow through you. My perfect holiness will be in you, and your hatred, your venom, your poison will be in me. And it wasn't a simple illness like pneumonia, but it was eternity in hell that Jesus took for us. Right? Think of those words to those people who were killing him. Father, they do not know what they're doing. Forgive them. Forgive them. Right? He was absorbing our anger. We are angry at him. What does he do? Rather than being angry at us, he comes and he pours his love and his joy into us and he absorbs our anger. That's the gospel. What have you done? What have I done? Nothing. Nothing. He did it while we were still angry at him, while we were still sinners. Cain was the first murderer. He murdered his brother, Abel. But whom he was truly angry at was God. If he could have killed God, he would have killed God. But he couldn't. So he instead killed the person that God loved the most at that point, which he thought was Abel. But God became killable in Jesus Christ. And we killed him. The first chance we got, first crack we got at God, we killed him. How does he react? He comes. Absorbs our anger, forgives us, and gives us a new life. Let me ask you, what angers you? What angered you this past week? Was that anywhere near as bad as what we have done to anger God? Right? How should we react at those moments in light of what God has done for us? Let us pray.